Welcome to the Christadelphian Classics podcast, brought to you by Wilderness Voice. Principles and Proverbs by Islip Collier. Part 2, Proverbs, Chapter 10, Justice. It may be remarked that in these occasional papers there's not much attempt to take subjects in their proper order, or justice would have come earlier. It's one of the elementary virtues. It was recognised and cultivated by some of the pagans in ancient times. And in every generation there have been indignant protests against that which has been regarded as unjust. There have been many different standards to which the concept of a just or exact measure could be applied, so that men of different ages in the world's history might fail to understand each other if they could be brought together. A modern Christian has a far higher standard of justice than that of an ancient Roman, but there may be a sense in which there's less of justice and more of a Kant in his application of standards to the practical realities of life. A Roman might conquer a desirable land and show no mercy to those who resisted him, but he would try not to give his predatory enterprise the appearance of altruism. Judging between his servants, he would try to be just, but if he wanted new lands from men who are not Romans, he would regard the want as sufficient to justify the appropriate action. Modern men will often make an elaborate pretense of acting from purely altruistic motives. They take new lands for the benefit of the natives. They take up the white man's burden, and they give the black man the opportunity to take up the white man's vices. Whether good or evil predominates as the result of these enterprises, it's certain that the driving force behind them is not the desire to help the inhabitants of the lands so conquered. With similar self-deception in the ordinary affairs of life, men will form a judgment and then seek for arguments to justify it. If they treat a man as an enemy, they'll seek out reasons for hating him, although perhaps protesting all the time that they do not hate, for Christ condemned the word. It is in this prevailing atmosphere of Kant that the most injustice is found, and there's the most need for the searchlight of truth. All people know that justice is a fundamental virtue, and all want to have justice on their side. A man must not be wrongfully accused. His rightful possessions must not be taken from him. We must not use a false balance or false measures in our business transactions. There is no need to emphasize these elementary lessons in dealing with Christians. There is a very real need, however, to point the lessons in another field where there is so much more possibility of disguise. Men who would scorn to tamper with literal weights and measures will sometimes almost make a virtue of dishonesty when they're not dealing with material things. A military man wrote a book describing the manner in which he'd worked up feeling against the enemy in the time of war by the suppression of some facts and the distortion of others. He gave an open record of how he'd committed abomination, and he was not ashamed, neither could blush. Sir Philip Gibbs, in his Realities of War, relates that in one of the minor engagements of the Great Conflict with Germany in 1914-18, when the British suffered a severe reverse, the Germans behaved well. They allowed a breathing space to bring in British wounded and even helped in the work, especially one heroic German doctor who laboured incessantly. I reported the matter at the time, wrote Sir Philip Gibbs, but I was not permitted to publish it. He made no comment on this prohibition, and this was perhaps a wise reticence, for it's difficult to see how an honest man could make an appropriate comment without running the risk of being put into prison. There is something peculiarly vile in such a systematic perversion, misrepresentation and suppression in the effort to intensify hatred of the enemy. When such cultivated negation of the first and most important of Christian principles is made in a reputedly Christian country and with every pretense of Christian virtue, it may well produce a mental nausea in men who try to be just. It's not only in the wars of nations that men treat their opponents with cultivated injustice. The same ugly dishonesty is displayed in nearly every controversy. It is, of course, difficult to be entirely just, and there will be always differences of opinion and mutual recrimination whenever men have definite convictions and strong feelings. If we've had any experience of such matters, we shall expect to be misrepresented in time of controversy. We shall be misunderstood, however lucid we are, and we shall be accused of unfairness, however just we are. These are evils inherent in human strife, and we accept them as the general rule. Sometimes, however, we come into conflict with one who, while disagreeing with us, and feeling strongly on the matter in dispute, nevertheless is evidently trying to be fair. He may not entirely succeed, or at least we may think that in some measure he fails, but we're conscious that, unlike the majority of controversialists, he's at least trying to be just. If we also try, there is mutual respect and at least the possibility of mental progress. When there is a general election for Parliament, we may learn some negative lessons in the subject. The spectacle is like a real-life satire of itself. All the negative native ugliness, meanness and moral depravity of man being emphasised as in the manner of a bitter parody. There's rarely any attempt to be just or even to be decently truthful, while often there's a studied effort to be unjust, by misrepresentation, suppression, distortion, or even as the late Lord Balfour described it, by frigid and calculated lying. We who look on with disinterested impartiality can see the ugliness of it all. We can appreciate the truth of scriptural description of sinful flesh, and brethren should be able to profit thereby in their own inevitable controversies, just as a vicious man may sometimes be shocked into decency by the contemplation of one even viler than himself. In this subject of justice, as in other matters, one extreme may beget another. There are patriots who cannot be just to the enemy, and there are internationalists who cannot be just to their own country. There are parents who always think that their children are in the right, and there are parents who always judge their children to be wrong. This last fault, no doubt, is a rare one, but there can be no question as to its existence. Even apart from such extreme prejudices and such complex reactions, there's much lack of justice in the homes where every virtue should begin. There is unjust severity and unjust laxity. Mothers are constantly cruel to the sons they idolise. The folly bound up in the heart of the child is cultivated and encouraged instead of being driven out. Finally, it may become too big to be driven out even by the drastic rod of the world. Fathers, too, are often at fault, although not so much with their sons. They have the opportunity for wider observations of the ill effects of home spoiling, and so if they're wise, they may be on their guard and more conscious of human weakness. He was a wise man who said, "It's a good thing I never had a daughter. I should have made a hopeless little fool of her." Contemplating the harmful reactions of extremes, we may well sound a warning to those parents who remember the old severity of family life and who now tend to go too far the other way. We have seen and commented upon the results of some of these modern theories. We may here point out that the extremes either way are unjust. There is opportunity every day to exercise ourselves in the use of just weights and just measures. Everyday experience may be in the trivial matters which are soon forgotten, but our reactions to these things are remembered. The little experiences pass away, but they help to mould the characters which remain. How many men in the business world pass irritably through each day of trial, so constantly complaining that unjust blaming becomes a habit? Some sensitive souls under their control suffer and chafe, while others who are hardened shrug their shoulders and say, "Whatever we do, we shall probably be wrong, so why trouble anyway?" Thus, injustice ends by making all corrections futile. Such an unjust taskmaster blames his servants for taking a course which is only proved wrong by the development of events which no man could possibly have foreseen. Indeed, we frequently witness this kind of petty injustice in all phases of life. "Why ever did you not do thus and so?" the petulant question is put when an unexpected event proves that certain preparations were desirable. But supposing that the course now recommended had been taken and the subsequent march of events had been quite different, what then? Equal blame, of course, for having made unnecessary provision for a possibility which never materialised. He who is just or unjust in that which is least will probably be just or unjust in that which is greatest. Most of us have our trials in the little matters of life. In these minor trials, character will be made or marred, and according to our reactions, we shall be judged. Perhaps the vilest exhibition of injustice noted in the Proverbs is expressed in the well-known saying, "A lying tongue hateth those who are afflicted by it." There have been modern writers who have observed this perverse wickedness of the human heart and have commented upon it with surprise, apparently unaware that it was mentioned by Solomon nearly 3,000 years ago. We can observe the principle at work even when we should not like to speak of lying tongues. When controversy arouses feelings, and there's even only a mild form of the usual misrepresentation and unfairness of statement, there we see the ugly law at work. According as men are unfair and unjust in their language, so their feeling of dislike will develop till it may become hatred in reality, whatever other name they might find for it. On the other hand, if we try to be just, even to those who do not treat us with justice, if we try to be fair, even to the most unfair of opponents, we shall bear no ill feeling, even to those who wrong us. Hatred is bred by being unjust far more than being treated with injustice, and love is developed by serving more than being served. We're told in Proverbs 21 verse 3 that to do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. In fact, we may assume that unless a supplicant at least makes an effort to be just, his sacrifice would not be acceptable. David, in his last inspired words, said, "He who ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God." Such a just ruler has been provided, and it was he who offered a perfect sacrifice in both life and death. The children of Israel needed to be reminded many times of this primary virtue of justice. Each time they soon forgot or failed to learn the lesson properly. repeatedly they were called to justice by the prophets, and passionate protests were made against their unequal ways, their selfishness, and lack of consideration for the rights of others. Kings, priests, scribes, and theologians all have their peculiar way of perverting justice and equity. Often men have done great injustice while trying with self-righteous zeal to enforce a straightening law of their own devising. A primary law given by God has been breached in the effort to enforce a recommendation of man. After all that the prophets had said, Christ needed to explain the law of justice again. His contemporaries were zealous for their traditions, but they neglected the weightier matters of the law of God, justice, faith, and love. They were eager to lade men with heavy and unnecessary burdens, but they could not apply the just balance and just measure to the affairs of spiritual life. So has it been in later days. There has often been a passionate zeal for rectitude in little matters of form and expression, resulting in bitter criticism and often injustice to fellow labourers. We have a strong conviction that when the just one passes the final judgment, some well-meaning but self-centred men will be reproved because they've rigorously enforced so many rules of their own and have been neglectful of justice, mercy, faith, and the love of God.